Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and every week, each Friday, I am honored to share the microphone with really interesting people. Now, these are people who are entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, I'm not sure there's a big difference there, authors, speakers, small business owners, virtual assistants, web developers, truly anyone who has wonderful stories to share and who are really excited to freely share their business wisdom as well as tips and actionable advice with us. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I welcome Brad Baldridge to the show. Brad is a late-stage college planning specialist. This is a little bit of a departure for us, and I can't wait to see what he's got to share. He helps parents of high school students plan and pay for college using strategies such as merit aid, need-based aid, tax planning, savings, and investing for college, negotiating with colleges, scholarships, and loans. And over the past 10 years, he has directly helped hundreds of families plan and pay for college. It's incredibly expensive. I know I had student loans forever. He has provided in-depth college plans resulting in increased financial aid, scholarships, identification of the right schools at the right price, and better loans. And his expertise is featured weekly on his podcast, Taming the High Cost of College. Since 2013, Brad and his expert guests have explored and shared great information related to college planning. And in this interview today, Brad is going to help us understand the college process ahead of time so you are proactive instead of reactive. Brad, good morning. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I am delighted that you're here.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Well, thank you. I wish I had known you. I went back to college later on in life and got my little computer science degree, and I'm really grateful I did. But man, oh man, those student loans were just tough. Seemed like it took
yes.
a long, long time to pay it off. And I mean, I don't know what I could have done differently, but I mean, I'm glad you're here because I think college planning is so important. You can't just kind of dive into it and hope for the best, can you?
Well, you can, but oftentimes it's not the best route for most families.
I wouldn't think.
I mean,
right,
I get that reaction
right.
a lot when I'm talking with people is, oh, yeah, my youngest is now a junior in college. We're pretty much done. But, man, I wish I would have known you 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Because, again, the college process is a lot more than what it used to be. So for parents out there that, you know, perhaps that's the way you did it as a parent, right? 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that's the way I did it, which was you kind of picked a local college, you know, the one you liked or was convenient or whatever it might be, and off you went, and you kind of figured it out as you went along and didn't really do a lot of planning. But with prices being what they are today, it's a much bigger expenditure, and it can pay off a lot more if you can plan and do things as efficient as possible.
I think one of my questions is, why is college so expensive? I mean, I truly don't understand where that cost is coming from.
Right. Well,
especially given the level of education that some of these colleges are putting out. I'll be honest
yes.
with you, I'm not wildly impressed anymore.
Well, unfortunately, there's kind of a multi reasons for it. One is that students in general are encouraged to go get that diploma. Whether they need it or not is not really discussed. It's mm-hmm. more and more as a higher percentage of students out of high school go on to college, and it's encouraged that, you know, that's kind of the path to success because of, you know, some of the statistics out there of, you know, college-educated students earn this much more than non-college-educated, et cetera, et cetera. But also some of the large employers are causing it as well. A typical large employer no matter what the job they're looking for, will say must have a college degree. It might be, say, a sales position where they say, well, you must have a college degree. And they don't really care what the degree is in, potentially, because they know it's going to be mostly on-the-job training. But it's an easy way for them to, you know, screen out and get the more ambitious, the more capable. And let's face it, a high school diploma these days doesn't mean a lot at some high schools because of the No Child Left Behind and some of the other things where they're essentially pushing most students through no matter their capability.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
A lot of employers are saying, well, if we require a college diploma, we're not getting in trouble with discrimination or anything, and we're getting enough applicants, so why shouldn't we just require a college diploma? Even though potentially that diploma, again, if you're a sales position or many of these positions out there and many of the new jobs out there, there is no career or education for it because the career didn't exist 5 years ago. So, as an example, if you think of like cell phone professionals, whether it's cell phone sales or cell phone design or cell phone programming, a lot of people that are in that industry didn't study it in school because it didn't exist back when they were in school, and they had to learn on the job anyway. And
like
that's
apps,
the reality.
Apps are everywhere. And
right.
As far as I can tell, there's no college degree to build an app, whether it's for an iPad or a cell phone or whatever it is. I mean, that's kind of what you learn as you go.
Right, exactly.
I think. I don't know that for a fact, but I think that's the case.
Yeah, no, they're starting to create them now. Where you would learn the relevant program languages that they use when they build phones and that kind of stuff. But again, the resourceful students out there or the resourceful workers out there have, kind of figured it out along the way and just got involved in the industry despite what they learned on their education. But with college today, I think there's a lot of parents out there, and I focus on what I call the late stage. In other words, you've got a high school sophomore, junior, senior, and you're trying to figure it out. College is a reality for a lot of kids, and it is the right path. It's just trying to figure out, well, how are we going to do it, and how are we going to pay for it? And I think that's the challenge. If you have a young student, if you have a newborn or a two-year-old, I think college is going to be substantially different, perhaps. I don't know that for certain, but I believe it will be changing over the next 10, 15, 20 years. As our, society changes and online education becomes more prevalent, et cetera, et cetera, it's hard to know what a two-year-old is going to do as far as education when they're 18. But if you've got a 17-year-old, you're kind of stuck with the system we have. So you got to kind of figure that out and determine, if we're going to go to college, how do we find the right college? How do we find an affordable college? How are we going to pay for it? What are we going to get from it? Because there's a large swath of the population out there now that's a little bit disenchanted because they did what they were told. They went to college, they got a degree, and now they're having a tough time finding work or work that pays well enough to afford the loans that they took in order to make this degree possible. And, that's another challenge that families are up against is how much can or should you borrow depending on what type of degree you might have, and how do you make that all come together?
Well, and then, if I'm hearing correctly, then there's the worry of you're going to have this degree, but you may not even wind up working in your degree field, which I see a lot.
Yeah.
I was the only female in my graduating class. Females, when I went back to school, really weren't in the technology sector all that much. They are now, well, to some degree, but I was the only girl in there, a female, and it didn't bother me any, but I have to say, out of everybody in that graduating class, only me and one other guy are working in our degree field, and I worked for myself. I never did take that degree and put it to work for anybody else but me, but I never intended to. I never intended to go get a job with it. I just wanted the education so I would know what to do with my own business.
Right. And then the other thing with
doesn't
parents.
Doesn't it bother people? They get these degrees and they're like, well, what the heck? What do we do now?
Yes, I would agree that is a big challenge. And that's where you kind of have to, again, evaluate what college is all about. Is college job training that's going to teach you what you need to know in order to go get a job, which in some career paths, that's pretty legitimate, right? If you're studying nursing or engineering or some, you know, programming and some of those things, the skills you learn in school may be applied directly to your job. But then there's other career paths and so forth where you maybe you learn how to become an effective communications expert of whatever, and you apply it to a very, you know, varied industries. And there is no direct path like that. So parents kind of need to decide why we get involved in college for our children. Is it training for a job? Is it an opportunity for them to get out in the world and grow up a little? Is it, I want them to have the college experience because I remember my college experience and how wonderful it was, so I want to give that to my kids? Or a combination of all three, and that helps you determine, you know, how much you're willing to spend and what types of schools you might consider, et cetera. Because I think there's a certain population, there's the good students out there, wherever you might draw that line, the good students and the go-getter type students will probably be successful no matter what they do. And then at the bottom end of the spectrum, the weaker student, the student that doesn't care for school, they're struggling with, well, do I have to go get this degree? And it's not something they enjoy. It's not something they want to do. Feel like they have to do it. And for those students, I think finding an alternative path might make sense where you combine internships or other avenues besides just directly going to college in order to get to the path that you want to go. That's kind of the first step for a lot of families is really understanding why is it are we interested in college? Is it because that's what we're supposed to do? Is it because we have a goal in mind? Obviously, certain careers require college degrees and often advanced degrees. If you want to be a psychologist where you see patients, there's a particular degree you need to have, or a doctor, or an engineer, or computer programmer. There's certain degrees that you may need, nurse or teacher. But in other places, I'm going to work at a corporation and become a sales manager. Well, what degree is that? Maybe it's a business
MBA,
degree.
Maybe
it's communications. Maybe it's the School of Hard Knocks. I mean, maybe you don't go to college. Maybe you just get out there and learn how to be a salesperson and grow from there. That path is a little less clear.
Right. And that leads me to my next question. I mean, what is your advice for people like me who decided to go back to college later in life and had no college planning in place at all? I mean, zip, nada. It was all a big shock to me, but I was dedicated to it. But I have to tell you, I probably did it all wrong looking back. But, it is what it is.
Right. And there's certainly, and I guess if you're going to spend the time, again, you need to boil that down to why am I doing this? Am I doing this to get a degree so that I'm promotable at the company I work for? Sometimes if there's a little bit of a ceiling as far as if you don't have a degree, you're not going to get as far as you'd like to go, perhaps. So you say, well, I'm going to go back and get a degree so that I can continue to advance. Or is it I'm trying to change careers altogether? And there's colleges out there that cater to the career changers or the later in life college students who are trying to complete a degree. And again, there's a lot of people out there that partially did college when they were young, then they went to work, and now they want to potentially go back and finish what they started. And that, I think, is a challenge as well, as far as how are we going to make this work as both, as raising a family or having to pay our own way and pay for college and potentially work on top of that is another challenge that, that you dealt with, that a lot of young students and a lot of people I'm working with were talking about, that 18-year-old going back to school, going to school for the first time, not the going back to school, but the rules that apply to the 18-year-old are different than the rules for the 30 or 40-year-old that's going back. And you need to understand that there is a drastic difference. So if depending on what camp you're in, you need to understand how it's going to work for you.
Well, and that leads me back to what we started out with, young families getting ready to go from high school to college. So when should parents start college planning? I mean, is this something they should be doing in the cradle? Should they, what is the optimum time to start college planning?
Right. So I think you need to divide that into two pieces. There's the piece that parents can do with the student, which is we're going to visit schools, we're going to choose schools, we're trying to figure out a major. We have to do our testing, there's entrance exams and that kind of stuff. And there's that stuff. And that you kind of need to have your student ready to participate. So for some families, that might be sophomore year. Some families, that might be junior year. Depends on the maturity of the student and what kind of goals they might have. But then there's also stuff that parents can do regardless of whether the student's ready or not. Are you going to save and invest for college? How are you going to pay for college? Learning the process, right? Parents can start understanding what the college process is going to be when they have a freshman or sophomore. Now, their student may not be ready to learn it, but they can learn it just so that they're ready. Again, because of how financial aid works, often falls on kind of on the parents' lap, not so much the student's lap. And whether or not you're going to qualify for need-based aid or merit aid or student loans or saving and investing, college savings plans, all those types of things can be figured out at any age. And some families, that might be their goal, right? We've got a 10-year-old. We're going to start saving now for an eventual college. Other families, we've got a 17-year-old, and we're behind. What are we going to do to get caught up? Because we don't know what we're getting into other than perhaps our own experience 25 years ago. Now what are we going to do, and how are we going to make this work? So I guess the point here is parents can start getting prepared earlier the better, in my opinion. So if you have a freshman or sophomore, it's certainly not too soon to start figuring that out. It might be too soon to visit a college with your student, but it's not too soon for you to understand, what you're up against and understanding all the different vocabulary and that kind of stuff.
You mentioned newborns at the top of the show. I was in my car the other day, and I had some talk show, I think it was. I wasn't really paying attention. And all of a sudden, I heard a gentleman asking the host, who apparently was a financial expert, about buying a Gerber life insurance plan for his newly adopted daughter. And then Gerber, of course, sold him the plan. I think it was really cheap. But then they also wanted to upsell him a college plan. And his question was, is this a good idea, or would saving his own money be a better way to go? So could you address that for us?
Sure. I think what I tell families of, with very young children is you just need, the best way to save for college is to get your own financial house in order and worry about that so that you're better able to pay for college when the time comes. But, and again, that's kind of the thought process. I've had many parents say, well, we feel college is important, and we're willing to pay substantial sums. We're willing to pay $20,000 a year or $40,000 a year, for each student. And we've got three kids, so you do the math, and 40,000 times 4 years is 160,000 times two or three kids. It gets to be a really big dollar amount. And that's, quite okay. And you just have to realize that you need to bake that into the budget. Other families are saying, well, we're just going to help where we can and maybe co-sign some loans, but we're not going to put that kind of money into it. Either one of those decisions is fine, but once you make those types of decisions, you need to kind of look at the reality of saying, well, if I'm going to contribute that kind of money, I need to start saving money now. And there's various ways you could save. You could just say, well, I'm going to make sure that we overfund retirement while the kids are young so that when we get to college years, we can scale back on our retirement and use that cash flow to pay for college. So we're going to maximize 401ks and IRAs and that kind of stuff while the kids are 2 and 3 and 4. And then when the kids are 16, 17, 18, we'll redirect cash flow at that time. Or you could set up a college savings. But what I encourage people to do is to make sure they're maximizing all their other savings opportunities as well. Because the reality for a lot of families is, should I save an extra $500 a month in my 401k at work? Should I save an extra $500 a month into some sort of college-directed plan? Should I save that in an emergency reserve? Plus, you know, or should I be spending this on the daycare bills that are coming along with my two-year-old? And there's no easy answer other than, again, because I think the rules will have changed by the time we get there. I think you're better off, you know, saving aggressively under, you know, within your own realm and not worrying so much about college with a young person. Now, once you get to a 12, 14, 16-year-old, now you might need to be shifting your focus and saying, all right, you know, if you have a 16-year-old right now, I think the rules we have today are probably going to apply when your student goes off to college. So now you can kind of change your focus and say, all right, these are the rules. Will I qualify for need-based aid? Will I qualify for merit aid? How do I visit a school? How do I find a school that's going to be a decent price? What am I going to do about multiple children as far as being fair? You know, sometimes you have the, you know, I had a dad in my office not too long ago where his oldest wanted to go to an expensive private school. And she had done very well and gotten large scholarships at the school and you know, really, quote-unquote, deserved it. But the net cost is still going to be about $25,000 for dad. And he was looking at that, and that same student had opportunities to go elsewhere at substantially less. And he's kind of, you know, wondering, well, if I spend $25,000 a year, you know, that's $100,000 for my oldest. Well, does that mean in order to be fair, I'm going to have to spend $100,000 on all four kids? So now we're talking $400,000.
Mm-hmm.
And dad was making reasonably good money, and he could, you know, and we did the math, essentially. He said, well, we can't afford to make this work. You know, it's going to delay retirement by a year or two. But that's the decision he had to make. And I think the challenge for most families is they don't make it, it's not an informed decision. They say, heat of the moment, right? It's really hard near the end of the senior year of high school to have, you know, your daughter or son saying, oh, I really, really want to go. And as a parent, you really, really want to send them. I mean, it's not like you don't want to do it, but you're looking at the bills and saying, okay, the cost is going to be very high. And for some families, if you do the math and you say, well, it's going to delay retirement by 2 years. Instead of retiring at 62, you're going to have to retire at 64. And some parents look at that and say, oh, that makes sense, and I'm willing to do that. I wasn't planning on retiring until 65 anyway. For other families, you know, your financial future is going to blow up. I hope your kids appreciate, you know, what you're doing, because at some point you may end up living with your kids because you're going to decimate, you know, all your savings and all your investments in order to make this college happen. And from a financial perspective, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And I've seen, you know, I've been in both of those conversations, and I think that's where families need to plan ahead and know what they're getting into so that you can avoid those mistakes. You know, some advice I gave to that father is say, well, let her apply wherever she wants to go. But make sure you make it very clear that just because she gets accepted doesn't mean she can go. If there's also the financial component that we need to include in the decision process and decide, well, is it worth it? And then we also talked about, well, how much of the loans and cost of college is going to be the student's responsibility? I have a lot of parents say, well, we'll pay for what it would cost to go to the local state school. Anything more than that is, you know, going to be the student's responsibility. Again, the challenge there,
which I don't think is unreasonable. I really don't. I mean, I think they should have some skin in the game.
I would agree. The challenge is the way the financial system works, it doesn't quite work out that way. Because the student is only typically, again, an 18-year-old student or 19 or whatever, you know, the young right out of high school student can only borrow typically $5,500 as a incoming freshman under the direct loan program. And if they show a high need, they might get some grants and other things. But a lot of students, their financial aid essentially equates to a $5,500 loan, and that's it. So it's okay that mom and dad say, well, anything
now,
beyond...
Is that one time, or is that each year?
That is each year, and actually it goes up
sophomore
and junior year to, by $1,000, so you can get a little bit more in your sophomore and junior and senior year. But there's a lot of parents out there that are saying, well, if we're going to go to the school that costs, you know, $30,000 after all the scholarships and everything else, the student can borrow $5,000. We're willing to contribute $10,000, but we're still $15,000 short. And the student is saying, well, I'll just borrow that just so I can go where I want to go. Unfortunately, the student can't borrow it by themselves. Mom and dad are going to have to facilitate. Typically, they're going to either co-sign a loan or they're going to borrow the money themselves and then relend it to the student, right? So the parents sign up for some form of loan, a plus loan or a co-sign a loan, they're still on the hook. And if the student doesn't pay, then mom and dad are still going to have to come up with the money and pay back the loan, even though the student, you know, kind of got in over their head.
See, you're making, for me, to my mind anyway, you're making a very strong case for not really kind of putting kids into college straight out of high school. Let them get out there, get a little bit of life experience, have their own checking account, find out that life isn't, you know, mommy, daddy, pay this. It's not fair. You're going to have to work for it. And then help them go to school. But that's just me being a hardhead, I think.
Yeah, potentially. And I think there is a little bit of that. But also, on the flip side of that, if you know that a particular degree, you know, as an example, a nursing degree, after 4 years, the student can go out and earning $50,000, $60,000 a year.
Right.
How much?
No, I understand that. I think some of these fluffy degrees are the ones, liberal arts. You know, those
well, right.
are the degrees that I'm thinking, what in the heck are you going to do with that?
Right, exactly. So when you look at the nursing degree and say, well, if they borrow, you know, $50,000, then the parents can help by saying, well, once you graduate, you can live in our house for a year or two so that you can completely wipe out your debt. Or they can say, well, we'll co-sign loans, but here's the rules. You know, you cannot live in an apartment by yourself. You have to have a roommate until we're off the hook, where we're not responsible for your loans. And you can't have a new car. You have to buy used cars until we're off the hook. And as a parent, you know, that's our contribution. That's how we're going to protect ourselves a little bit. We don't want you, you know, we don't want to put ourselves in a position where we can't afford a new car because we're paying for your school, and turn around and have you go buy a new car while you still owe on your loans that we are responsible for.
I'm gathering that this happens more often than not, by the way you're talking.
It does, yes.
Yeah, this
I mean,
isn't
lots
just
of
a once-in-a-while thing. Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's lots of parents that can't afford college,
mm-hmm.
and that's great. And there's some parents that can't afford college. And then there's also kind of the in-between where you can afford some of it, but you can't quite stretch as far as you'd like to go. And really understanding... And again, when you really boil it down, I think the biggest challenge for many families is really understanding ahead of time what you're getting into. So things like my podcast, where you can listen to experts talk about, you know, the different career paths and understand the finances and talk about loans and all the stuff that you're going to need to learn. And I think that's the biggest challenge for many families is, families are relatively busy. You know, mom and dad are potentially both working. You know, kids are in high school, so there's lots of activities going on. And on top of that, you're trying to figure out college. And with the price of college these days, and again, in the past, you'd say, well, I don't need to figure it out. I'll just write checks when we get there, and if I didn't do so well, that's fine. That's kind of like buying a car now, right? Many people don't just wing it when they buy a car. They don't just say, well, wake up on Saturday morning and today is the day I'm going to have a new car. And next thing you know, they wander into a dealer and by noon they have a new car. Most people don't do that. Yet that's how they kind of treat college. Most people, when they buy a car, obviously, you know, they do research from various brands and that kind of stuff because ultimately they don't want to get stuck with that lemon, right? They don't want to say, well, you know, I bought the wrong car and now I need to change it and it's going to cost me thousands and thousands of dollars to, you know, get rid of this car and buy the car that I should have bought the first time. And nobody wants to be in that position. It's kind of the same thing with college. I don't really want to, you know, pick a college or go down a path only to realize that it was the wrong path and now we have to change paths and it's going to cost us either we lose, you know, a year's worth of studying or we lose, you know, we pay too much for what we could have gotten for less elsewhere. We miss out on scholarships. We miss out on, you know, financial aid, whatever it might be. And I think that's where families then need to get into the technical side of things. You can figure out whether or not you can qualify for merit aid and need-based aid ahead of time.
Now, explain the difference between those. You've mentioned those a couple of times,
mm-hmm.
and I don't understand what the difference is.
Right. So need-based aid is based on a family's ability to pay. So a typical family, it's based on the income and assets of mom and dad and the income and assets of the student. And a lot of times the student's income and assets are zero or nearly zero. So really it boils down to how much does mom and dad earn and how much do they have in investments and that type of thing. Now, and then it's just you take, it's kind of like doing your taxes. You fill out a form, you plug in all these numbers, you apply a bunch of formulas and you get an answer. And that answer is called your EFC, your expected family contribution. And that number can tell you how much aid you're going to qualify for at a particular school. So as an example, a typical family's EFC might come in at $20,000, which is expected family contribution. So it kind of equates to how much the colleges and government feel the family can afford to spend. Now, a lot of families don't have $20,000 in your budget, but that $20,000 isn't just what you can take out of your budget. It's also what you may have saved and invested along the way. It's what mom and dad might be able to borrow. So it includes a number of factors. Well, once you have that number, let's say you're looking at a school that costs $20,000. Well, if there's $20,000 cost minus your $20,000 EFC, means you do not have any need. So you're not going to qualify for any need-based aid. Now that same school might say, but you're a strong student, so we're going to give you merit aid. So merit aid might be in the form of a scholarship or grant of some sort, where they say, yes, we cost $20,000 in tuition, but for you, because you're a strong student, we're going to give you a $5,000 scholarship. And that $5,000 scholarship is based on your academics or your athletics or your volunteer work or whatever. And there's lots of different reasons you might win a scholarship. But that scholarship has nothing to do with what mom and dad earn. So that scholarship is not based on need. So some families will get need-based aid. Some families will get merit aid. And some families will get both. And, of course, some families will get neither. So and understanding what you have a shot at, I think, is a challenge for many families.
Well, you hear so many different things, you know, out-of-state tuition. You know, I don't even know what that means, out-of-state tuition. Why would it be different? I mean, it seems to me if you're going to be going to the school, you're going to the school. I mean, I really don't understand how all these things are calculated, but I guess my real question is when you do, you're dedicated to taking your child or your children through the high school process and getting them into college, it sounds to me like there's an awful lot to be considered. This is not a light decision at all, is it?
No, absolutely not. It's, and again, I equate it to, you know, other large events, right? I mean, when you plan a mm-hmm. two-week vacation, most people don't say, okay, today's the first day of vacation, you know, as a family, let's figure out where we want to go. Well, you know, the clock starts now. We've got 2 weeks to do whatever we want. And then you wander to the airport and say, all right, where could we go? And then once you land somewhere, okay, where do you think you want to sleep tonight? Most people don't, you know, do a vacation that way. Unfortunately, that's how college is done by a lot of families, where you just kind of stumble through the process. And if you work at it and understand the rules, you can save yourself a lot of aggravation, a lot of money. What I tell people is college is paid for with time, with money, and with emotions. A lot of families get very emotionally tied up. You know, there's a lot of stress in the family, et cetera, around college. You're going to have to spend some time figuring out college. There's the testing. The student's going to have to take the SAT or ACT test, most likely. There are a few colleges that's not required, but most of the time the students are going to take it. You're going to have to spend time visiting the colleges. Mom and dad are going to have to spend time figuring out the family budget and understanding how they're going to pay and that kind of stuff. You're going to spend time, you know, preparing for college, writing applications and essays and becoming qualified for a particular school. You know, the requirements might say you need 4 years of English or 2 years of math, or we expect a, you know, volunteer work at this school, or we expect a, you know, a test score at this level. So there's all that time and put into it, as well as the money and the planning, in order for the college process to go smoothly. And again, for many families, it's a little bit overwhelming. I mean, there are professionals out there that can help you. There are what we would call admissions counselors, and they can be at your school. They could be someone that you hire separately, but they tend to work with students and help them figure out what they want to be when they grow up and how to find a school that might be a good fit and how to fill out the college application process and how to choose a career path that might be appropriate and that kind of thing.
And again, when does that process start? Freshman, junior, earlier? When is a good time to start addressing that for the student?
I mean, all of the above. Most of the people that I talk with in the college profession, earlier is better than later. So, I mean, if you have a freshman or sophomore and you think you might get involved with someone on the admission side that we just mentioned, some of those people tend to start working with their students as freshmen or sophomores to make sure they're doing the right things in high school in preparation for college. Now, this is not required necessarily. If you have a junior now or even a senior now and you need some help, there are people out there that can help you, again, choose majors, choose colleges, all that kind of stuff as well. You know, at any point along the way, there are some people that are willing to do it. And there's some people, again, where they say, no, I only work with high school freshmen and sophomores. That's the way the system I use works. So it's just finding the right people. Then there's Right. And then there's also, like myself, I tend to work with parents. If you're saying, well, how do you write a good essay? I'm really not that guy. I'm more in the money and finance and spreadsheets and understanding how to plan and pay for college, not how do you write a good essay, how do you choose a major. Those types of things are not, you know, that's kind of a different skill set. I come from a financial planning background of, should we use saving and investing? Should we use loans? Can we take a home equity line of credit? How much can we afford to spend on college without jeopardizing retirement? All those kinds of planning questions could be a completely separate professional that works, again, on the financial side of things. And then there's also professionals that help in the tutoring and test planning. If your goal is to get into XYZ school, you know, if you say, I want to get to Harvard, well, you're going to have a certain test score. If you want to get to your local state college, you're still going to have a certain test score. And for some kids, they might need to improve. And so how do you improve? Is it worth prepping for the test? Is it worth taking a course or one-on-one tutoring? So there's that whole area that families can work in as well.
This may be off topic a bit, but you hear this a lot, and I have no idea if this is an urban legend, but you often hear of kids going to college in that first year, they just bomb. You know, they're away from home for the first time, they're partying like crazy kids, it's difficult. Look, when I went back to school, I was pretty sure I was going to die. I was working during the day. I was volunteering for this giant festival that we've got down here, and I literally had bruises under my eyes. I was going to school at night. I was working during the day. I was, you know, chairing this committee. For the first couple of weeks, I really didn't think I was going to survive it. I mean, it was completely turned my life around, upside down rather. And then when I got used to it and I got my groove, I was like, okay, I can do this. But I'm telling you, I caught myself wondering how, you know, first-time college students, how they cope, because it is a very different world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then,
so I guess I think my question, that was just an observation, but my question is, what happens to these parents? You know, they put up this money or the student has put up money, and all of a sudden they've bombed out. What happens then? Is there, I mean, do you try to help them prepare for that eventuality too?
Yeah, I mean,
In terms of finances?
Yes. Well, I mean, nobody wants to go into it intending to fail, so to speak. But it does happen.
No, but you should have some safeguards, I would think.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you have a student, and again, that's the challenge, right? There's a certain student population out there that is going to do well pretty much no matter what you do and where you put them. It's just a matter of figuring out what's the best fit. But then there are students that aren't as strong as students. You know, maybe they got B's in high school and they worked hard to get their B's in high school. And you might be a little nervous about, well, if they're away from home and mom's not here to make sure they study, you know, what's going to happen? Are they going to fail out? And a lot of times they do. So sometimes you might have to start slower and say, all right, you're going to go to the local college, live at home, and, you know, get a semester or a year under your belt. And then if you want to go off to college, we'll do it then. But I have a lot of parents where they're saying, you know, we're on shaky ground. We're not sure if college is right for our kid. And in general, my recommendation then is, well, don't try the waters at a very expensive school. You know, don't go to the local state college or go to the local community college even, and kind of work your way up if that's more appropriate. Because that can, obviously, you put a lot less money on the line, and if it doesn't work out, you lose a lot less than if you spend, you know, $25,000 for one semester at a expensive private school, only to have your student come home when it's over with, you know, not getting F's and dropping out and not having anything to show for that $25,000. That's an expensive life lesson.
Yeah, I think it would be difficult around the Thanksgiving table.
Yes.
I can't even imagine.
Right. And that's another piece of the puzzle, is working with your student and trying to figure that out. And that there's a balancing act there. Sometimes parents pushing students gets them to rise to the occasion and gets them to do what they need to do. Sometimes parents pushing students kind of just pushes them into a path that's ultimately going to end in failure. And, you know, after I've talked to a few of those types of students where I really only went to college because that's what mom and dad expected, and I didn't really want to go, but I felt obligated to go, and once I was there, I didn't do very well, and I resisted even going. But again, a lot of students, a lot of families don't have a plan B. So if you're not going to go to college, what are you going to do? And that's, you know, I think a big blank area in the U.S. at least right now, is there are alternative paths, but nobody talks about them. Nobody highlights them. You know, instead of college, you know, college isn't right for everyone.
Some examples? No, it's not. I mean, I didn't want to go to college straight out of high school at all. It didn't even occur to me. It was only after I had some life experience and kind of knew what I wanted to be when I grew up that I said, okay, I'm going to do this. And, of course, I was an adult. I had to do it on my own, which wasn't a bad thing for me to do. I mean, it was, you know, I was ready. I was willing to sacrifice whatever I needed to do. And, you know, I think I'm a better person, stronger business person for it. Had my parents had the wherewithal or, you know, put me in college, I would have been one of those kids who went, I would have found every way I could out of there.
Right.
And I know
exactly
that. I mean, I recognize that now.
Right. So, I mean, some alternatives. I mean, there's the military, which obviously has a lot of upside and downside, and it's certainly not right for everyone. And And as the military is downsizing, you know, that's a path for a small number of people, but it is a path. But there's also things like internships and, you know, getting into the trades and that type of thing. There's various paths into, you know, police officer and welder and, you know,
the skilled
road
trades.
Construction and skilled trades of various types where you might have to be an intern or a apprentice of some sort where you learn the job and you don't get paid very well, but it's a lot different than paying to go to college, right? You make $15 an hour to follow a plumber around and learn how to be a plumber. That pay isn't great, but it certainly beats paying $15 an hour to follow a plumber around and learn how to be a plumber. And
on-the-job training.
Right. It's on-the-job training. And in the end, you'll learn some skills that are useful. And, you know, and then there's just going out there and jumping into something, whether it's getting involved in a business or whatever it might be. I mean, there's, a lot of career paths where, you know, like a graphic designer, you could go to college for it and learn how to do it, or you could just go learn how to do it. And in a lot of cases, you know, if, I don't know about you, but when I hire a graphic designer, I don't really care how they learned how to do it. I just care that they can do it well and do what I need done. Whether they have a college degree or not is immaterial. It's can they do what I need done at a fair price? And, you know, so if you go learn the skill of graphic design, you don't necessarily need a college degree.
Exactly. I mean, I'm a web developer as well as a virtual assistant, and I have a college degree. Nobody cares. Trust me, it's not on my website. It's not part and parcel of the conversation that I have when somebody's hiring me. They don't care. They just want to know that I can produce what they need and do it quickly and effectively, and it does what it's supposed to do for them once it's launched. That's all they care about. The degree, honestly, honest to goodness, was for me. I wanted that degree.
Right.
You know, I wanted
exactly.
to learn
so,
to write code. I wanted to learn, you know, I just wanted to learn all about the Internet. I knew that was where I was going to make my living eventually. So it was something I needed to do for me, but I did it when the timing was right, and I did it when the passion for it was high with me. Otherwise, I would have never survived it, truly.
Right, exactly.
I would not have survived it.
Yeah, and again, so, and with the, you know, the, with the advent of some of these online courses and that type of thing, a lot of the, you know, learning how to do something with YouTube and all these online courses and all this kind of stuff is not really that hard. I think for a lot of young people, though, it's the discipline of saying, I need to learn something, right? If you, for a lot of students, because they're going to class and expected to be able to do this type of, you know, produce information, write papers, and provide stuff, and be knowledgeable for a test is the only reason they're doing it. And you could do it. You could learn the exact same stuff without the college experience. You could just go online and say, I need to learn about this and that and the other thing. And a lot of these courses, the lectures are available online. You can go take the course. Now, you're not necessarily going to be able to get a degree at this point, although some places you are now, where you can actually get an online degree and take the exact same course that you would have got at a much lower cost if you're just, you know, after the knowledge. I think for a lot of families, though, they're interested in college, not just for the knowledge, but also the opportunity to grow up and, you know, kind of your first stop away from home where you're not completely out there on your own. You've got a community of like-minded people that are also out there on their own, and you kind of grow together as college students. But you can get the knowledge elsewhere if that's the goal.
You absolutely can. Okay, I wanted to ask you, you had referenced in the materials that you sent over before we got on the show that college planning can be affected by various scenarios. I know there's business ownership, rental properties, divorce, athletics. We've covered a bit about income. Can you talk a bit about those, business ownership, rental properties, divorce, death? And can you kind of you give us some for instances?
Sure. So I guess the overall arching idea of college planning is there's, you know, perhaps 100 strategies that might make college go a little smoother for you, whether it's lowering the cost or making, you know, saving some time or whatever it might be, or things that you can do that will make it better. Now, of those 100 strategies, only a few will apply to any particular family. So as an example, if you're a business owner, you could set up a tuition reimbursement plan in your business, hire your student in your business, and reimburse their tuition to some extent. Now, there's lots of rules and regulations about that, but as a business owner, you have the opportunity to hire your student and pay them a wage, which might give you some tax benefits. You also then could set up a tuition reimbursement plan, which also might provide some tax benefits, and lower your overall cost of college. Now, obviously, those two strategies only work if you own a business. They don't work if you don't own a business. In a divorce situation, financial aid is based on only one parent for the federal method. So if mom and dad are divorced, the parent that's going to be on the financial aid form is the parent that the student stayed with the most in the previous 12 months. Now, in a lot of cases, in a modern divorce, the placement for the students is somewhere close to 50-50. So then it's like, well, where did the student stay more? Well, you can actually plan it and say, you know, for college reasons, we want junior to stay with mom more than dad for the next year so that mom is the one that we put on the financial aid form, because that will generate better outcomes than if we put dad on the form. So that would be an example of planning ahead and saying, all right, we got to figure out how this would work if dad was on the form. We have to figure out how this would work if mom is on the form, figure out which one is better, and then intentionally make it so that that's the person that is on the form. And again, but I've had a lot of parents who say, well, had I known that, we would have done things differently last year, but we didn't know that, and now we're kind of stuck with what actually happened. And so that would be an example of
divorce. You're making my head hurt. Wow. I mean,
yeah.
There's just so... I'm sitting here going, oh my gosh. I mean, you just don't even think about how all of these different things can affect, you know, college, but there they are. Okay, so that's divorce. So what about rental properties? I would have never thought, when I read that, my eyebrows went up. I went, really? How does, you know, having income properties, I mean, how does that have anything to do with college tuition or college planning?
Right. So the good and the bad of rental properties. So rental properties, generally speaking, are considered an asset when we talk about need-based aid. So if you have, you know, a 10-family apartment building worth $1 million and it's paid off, well, now you've got $1 million asset that's going to be counted against you for financial aid purposes. And there's a good chance that will mess up need-based aid, unless you're going to very expensive schools or if you have a lot of kids. I mean, it's not a certain thing, but it certainly makes it a lot tougher than if you didn't have it. Now, the plus side of it, though, is you can also get your students involved in the rental property. And again, you can pay the students to participate in the rental property. You could pay your students to mow the lawn and clean the units as when you have turnover and paint and do maintenance and that kind of thing. And that might be an opportunity for you to pay the students well and reduce the taxes that mom and dad have to pay, and shift it to the students. And again, a lot of students who aren't earning a whole lot of money don't pay much in taxes. So, you know, parents that are in high tax brackets might be able to shift the income to lower tax brackets. So that's kind of an advantage. Now, if you're familiar with rental property, and this is a strategy I talk about with families where you understand what rental property is about, because it's not something that perhaps you want to do all by yourself, but if you know your students are going to be going to the state school, you know, in another town nearby, you might want to buy rental property near that school. And if you've got experience with rental property, you know
that makes sense.
What you're getting yourself into. That's where I caution people. If you've never bought rental property before, this may not be a strategy that's right for you, because rental property is a business that you really need to understand But if you feel like you do understand the rental business, you might consider buying a rental property near the school, have your student manage it for you, and they can get some of their friends, and your student and friends can live in the rental property, and your student can get paid to manage it, and it might cut your housing costs down substantially. And, you know, if you understand real estate, you could be making money at the same time. As a strategy, again, you know, there are landlords who specialize in owning apartment buildings, et cetera, that are nearby colleges that rent to students or graduate students or faculty or whatever it might be. And that might be an opportunity for people that are familiar with the rental property market. And again, that makes things a little more complicated.
Apartment. Right. What about, I live in a college town, and right around the college there's a lot of small apartment buildings that are privately owned, and they're kind of used for, you know, off campus housing for a lot of these kids. Is that something that, you know, people should be looking at?
Yeah, but that would be the exact example, right? So if one of those properties was for sale, and again, if you had the experience to understand, is it at a fair price? Are the rents fair, et cetera, et cetera? So you got to be able to analyze it and figure out if it's a good deal or not. But if it is, well, and you're, you know, that's something you want to do, well, let's, you know, go ahead and do that. It may make sense for some families. But, and again, you know, and talk to your advisors that help you with your rental property and have them determine if it's a fair price, whatever it might be. But that's, again, just one of many strategies, you know, around the rental market. You know, there's various strategies. You know, if you have a relatively high income, you might want to, you know, one of the big problems with a high income is you pay a lot in taxes. So if there's any way that you can pay for college and take advantage of tax breaks, you certainly want to do that. And you can do that with college savings plans. You can do that with the opportunity credit. There's all kinds of different tax opportunities for families to help pay for college. If you're relatively low income, you might be looking at how to deal with need-based aid, merit aid, negotiating with schools, whatever it might be. You know, I have had a young girl that was very talented, and the family ran a small business, and the small business, at least on paper, wasn't making a lot of money. So the family's income was low. The girl was very talented. She could sing very well. She was part of a, you know, a statewide choir. So she was, you know, selected to be one of 30 or 40 in the whole state to participate in this particular choir. And she wanted to go on and study theater and do some of those things. Well, she found a college where they appreciated her skills, and they offered her large scholarships, plus this family showed some need. So the net cost of college for her was about $8,000 at a school that, you know, starts at $55,000.
Wow.
Well,
that's pretty impressive.
Right, and that was her thing. I've had other situations where, you know, the student's not a real strong student for the particular college, but they really want to go. Mom and dad are earning substantial money, and they just say, all right, if that's where he wants to go, we're going to pay. And they just essentially write checks for $40,000 a year or $50,000 a year. And nothing wrong with that either. Now, in that situation, if we can write those checks and take advantage of tax breaks and that kind of stuff, you know, if we can save 5 or 10% on taxes of $50,000, now it's worth it to do the planning on the tax side of things. And so for every family, there's a little bit different. When you have multiple students in school, that can make a difference as well. Families with one student in school may not qualify for much aid, but when you have two or three, you qualify for more. I had a family with triplets not too long ago qualify for aid because of the fact that they had three going to school simultaneously, and that can make a difference. Plus, they were able to talk to the college and see, you know, we joked and said, well, let's see if we can find a college, you know, you buy two, get one free.
Right.
It didn't turn out that way, but we did get a pretty good offer from the colleges because they had three all going at the same time.
I can't even imagine that. Well, listen, we have hit the 60-minute mark, so thank you so much for being with me here today. Before I let you go, where can people find you on the Internet?
Okay. So my podcast, which I would encourage anybody that wants to just learn more in general, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you understand podcasts, so plug into the college podcast at tamingthehighcostofcollege.com. There's also a website there, and if you want to get in contact with me directly, you can go through that website and send us a contact or email. I could also be reached at brad@bradbaldridge.com directly as my email. If anybody has questions or they want to reach out to me, they can send me an email. They can go through the website and just learn more there as well.
Of course, they can find you on Facebook and probably LinkedIn as well. So,
yes.
Well, listen, Brad, thank you so much for being with me here today. It's been wonderful chatting with you. And I know our audience enjoyed the takeaways as much as I did, and I learned a good bit about college. I don't need to go back to college, but I actually learned a good bit about it. So if anybody asks me anything about it, I know enough to send them to you. So that takes care of that. Anyway, listen, everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour. You can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Brad Baldridge, and I will see you next week. Brad, thank you so much, and you have a great weekend.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.